I think as artists, because you are creating something that was never there, you can get lost in what reality is, because you can make everything reality.
Das ist der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast, der Podcast rund um Nachtleben und Clubkultur.
Wir sprechen mit DJs, Türstehern, Tänzern, Clubbetreibern und anderen Nachtmenschen.
Mein Name ist Gesine Kühne.
Und ich bin Jakob Töne.
Herzlich willkommen beim Electronic Beats Podcast.
Hello, it's me, Jakob Töne, and welcome to the Telekom Electronic Beats podcast. This episode is in English again, as I talk to the Iranian-Dutch artist Sefta Lisa. The first time I watched a music video by her, I really felt refreshed. It's pop music with a different approach, besides the common song structures, and a video that was very progressive in terms of mood and storytelling. Whenever you watch or listen to her tracks, it's all about deep processes of feelings that are very much present. Sefta Lisa and I talked about the process of her recent album Shabrang and how she's getting so deep into topics without losing her mind. She also told me about her way to deal with this uncertain time and how self-isolation can also be an opportunity for self-care and reflection. But let's get not too much into detail and let's start with a conversation with Sefta Lisa. Welcome, Sefta Lisa. Hello, Sefta.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. Excited about this podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for coming into our virtual studio. I know we talked about it already, but we've met before. A year ago, it was the Electronic Beats Festival in Budapest. And I was pretty impressed by your show. Actually, it was the first time I saw it. I didn't make it before, but I was very impressed about you as an artist, so I was very happy to have you there. And so nowadays, I'm very happy to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
So welcome.
Thanks
again.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
When people deal with your art and you as an artist, they notice like you like to do things differently. Like you started music as an autodidact when you were already 24 years old and you have taught yourself everything from the scratch. Like you make pop music with Iranian influences and you ran your first fashion show at the age of 31. Does all this make you more and more determined to always be the underdog, or is it really exhausting from time to time?
Well, I think you said that quite accurately. I think we linger between the duality of those two realities, because in fact it is very beneficial to be the underdog from time to time, but it can also be exhausting because you're still trying to move big weights and influence something, and but you don't have the typical means that a major pop artist or a label has.
So need to invest more power, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's difficult because nothing ever gives you a guarantee. It doesn't give you a guarantee that if you join that kind of major corporation, are they really going to push the weights for you? You don't know that. So I always try to stay more centered with my own reality and not necessarily linger too much on the grass looking greener on the other side. Because in reality, I feel that it is hardly ever the case that the grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah, I agree. Getting to one of your creations, one of your current creations, you just dropped an album this summer, or just released. And about your new album, you were saying, this album represents to me that the essence of it all to me is love. It is a deep letter to myself, my own Bible I have to write in order to trust and believe in life, trust in myself and my character as a human being. What do you mean exactly by that?
I think that the quote doesn't necessarily need a lot of explanation, but I do think that human beings need channels and they need hangers to hang their reality on. So it's kind of like pillar points, like, okay, I believe in God, or I believe in, you know, and the stronger the faith is, the easier it is for a human being to dedicate their life and kind of structure their life. You know, it's the same when you find your partner and you're like, I want to marry this person, or I want to be with this person, then that is a reality that you hang your reality on. And I think as artists, because you are creating something that was never there, you can get lost in what reality is, because you can make everything reality. And so
wasn't it
grounding, basically.
Wasn't it a specific or very interesting time then to release the album during a global pandemic, especially in a time where, as an artist, you're very much struggling with a lot of things, even like when you're situated in your, let's say, own reality, there's a certain point where it touches with the economic reality and then you're struggling. Was it a special feeling for you to have it released in that time?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was way more present than normal. You know, normally I am releasing something as a secondary activity while I'm on the road or while I'm doing something else. And now the entire release was my primal activity. So it was quite strange, because I was way more present and therefore I could also feel what was going to be released, and also the climate of the world. So it was definitely a completely different experience. Yeah.
I mean, you've been on the road a lot, and also in a regular time after an album, you'd be on the road again touring. And yeah. I think there was also a tour planned. And I mean, you're used to have people around. How was it then to be more for yourself and maybe in the studio just with Mookie, your producer, but you're also producing a lot by yourself. How was it then?
Well, I think that I preferred the time by myself a lot, because I think that I get overwhelmed pretty easily by the being in touch with people. I pick up energies. I'm pretty sensitive. So I realized that a lot of my life in the past years was more about survival than about actually living. And then, like, when I had the time to be more to myself and have more time with myself, then I realized that the normal threshold that I used to go for was way too high for me. I just took on way too many things.
But you needed a step back to realize.
Yeah, yeah. I needed a step down to realize that the 24/7 machine that I had going on for years wasn't really doing the best for my personal life. Yeah.
Like, looking now for the time when you said that you were realizing that you were in a rush and your everyday's life was changing immediately as you were more focusing on yourself and not be very influenced by others. How do you use the time nowadays, or like, how is your everyday life now in comparison to before March, before Corona?
I respect my personal space a lot more, and I spend way more time on other things than, using myself as a vessel for music. So I meditate and I practice yoga and I'm cooking more. I'm trying to balance myself without the constant force of work. And there's a lot more reflection. So about everything, about the past, about the present and the future. So, yeah.
So I'm very happy that you gave me this, this hour to record with you. I feel very special right now because, I mean, it seems obviously when you're releasing an album, there's also a lot of promo stuff going on. And I mean, we're coming to this later in the podcast, but you were also having a very special live stream you've made in August. But yeah, I feel very special right now.
Thanks.
To get your time. Maybe let's start a little bit with your roots. I mean, you don't make a secret out of it. You were born in the Iran and you went to the Netherlands by the age of 5 with your parents. When you remember back, or can you remember back, and how did you feel back then when you arrived in the Netherlands?
I don't remember that much. I do seem to get flashes of experiences, but lately I am just feeling more, not necessarily the experiences as a child, but more the energy that is in my body and that has to do with my heritage. And I think that as I'm aging, I start to feel more deeply connected to my roots, because they kind of inform the part of nature that I am. Sometimes I just feel things inside me. So it's not necessarily experiences from the past, but it's more like spiritually feeling where you come from and why you are what you are. And because I think that those are the roots and I'm the branches. And because I haven't been really surrounded with my roots that much, I sometimes am surprised by the branches of the tree. I'm like, where does this branch come from? But now that I'm feeling more and more in touch with my roots, I seem to understand the branches more.
We can also see that, or as you described, that while you're aging, you're getting more and more influenced out of your DNA or out of your heritage. You can really see that in your musical discography. Because, I mean, on your recent album, you're also including more and more Farsi, the language of Iran. And it's interesting to see. The development. Yeah. It's also visible for the outstanding people or the outsiders.
That's nice.
You were also very influenced by your family, I've read. Can you tell me more about your life at home with your parents? And I think you once said that you're coming out of a family of artists. Is that right?
Yes, but this is exactly the same as the example before, because I was not really present with them. Like, I lived in the Netherlands from the age of 5. So, I mean, this is what I mean by discovering your roots. Like, I discovered through stories that my family is, like, they're all artists. They're poets, musicians.
So it's more the family that is still in Iran and not particularly your parents.
Yeah. Ah, okay. And in that way, I discovered that the path that has chosen me is not very unfamiliar in my family.
How important is this mixture for you, that you're getting now more and more influenced by your original or your heritage?
I think it's really important because I kind of take pride in it, and I never used to really see that. But it's like, it's also a lot of subconscious there's a lot of subconscious layers going on. I don't necessarily particularly choose to be influenced by something. It's like an ongoing process. And then, like, for instance, I started to notice that when I sing Persian songs, I sing differently. I just somehow sing with the core, with the gut, with everything. And I already feel like I always do that. But apparently when I sing in Farsi, there's something, you know, sparks
something's
within
changing.
Me. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that is just like the recognition of the soul that that's where you come from. That's your ancestry. That is the scales that you tonally refer to the most or that you recognize the most. So I think it's a mix of logical things and subconscious things.
When we were talking about like the change of influences and about coming this out of subconscious, how is it about talking about your identity? I mean, that must be very difficult then to always think about your identity. As you started with your musical career, you were not that much influenced by your heritage as nowadays.
I don't really think about my identity anymore, except for when I'm giving interviews. I think in the beginning, it was necessary because you need a starting point. You need to start somewhere. You need to make it vocally explainable to someone else what you want to do. But I don't do that anymore. I really don't think about my identity at all. I think it's become like a natural thing and it's like a flow. And I believe that our identities evolve as we grow. And I'm not really at all like, I used to separate that from myself. And now it's like, now it's me. And that is what makes things a lot easier. I don't need to think about if it's okay to do this or that for the image or, you know, because the image is the identity, you know, and the identity is me walking through life. So
yeah,
it's become a lot different than before. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see because when I look up your videos or watch your music videos, also your show, it's a lot about vision and also staging to be like to express yourself also via visual also via your visual identity and yeah, it always looked, or how difficult is it for you to think about the vision and then maybe after a time you don't feel that way anymore? Is there or do you feel sometimes also a bit separated of your concepts or
no, not
at
all.
Still...
No, I think it's because I have always stayed really close to what I was in that moment. So I'm always circling around the center. And the only times I would get a little bit off or lost is when I was like really overworked or traveling very hard. And I think besides that, I've always tried and remained centered. So plus the work that I publish is never and like a decision that is based on like a moment. It's always been work that has been evaluated by myself for at least like a period of time. So no, I don't really have that. I always try to stay around that center. And then I don't really regret things. So.
Oh, that's a good thing. Cause yeah. I mean, then you have also a red line and I mean, you can see that obviously, when you look or when you watch the mm-hmm. older videos and today's videos, the current ones, there's definitely a red line and you can see a certain signature in every work from you. Mm-hmm. And I must be honest, I was pretty impressed when a friend of mine sent me the video of Human. And mm-hmm. At first, the track didn't really catch me as mm-hmm. I was, I think at that time I was a little bit going into a different direction, but I was surprised. I was surprised, and there was something new I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And then I got interested, and that was my first mm-hmm. touch point actually with you as an artist. And then mm-hmm. I got more and more into the music, and mm-hmm. like or still nowadays, Aizen is one of my favorite travel albums when mm-hmm. I'm like trying to calm down and
that's
let
amazing.
my thoughts be thoughts, then I'm listening to that album. But
that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great album. I can definitely recommend. So the new one, as it's again, it's a surprise. It's different, and you can really see that you're developing. Mm-hmm. And what I'm really interested in is how is the process? I mean, you were saying that a lot of your outcome takes a lot of time, and mm-hmm. Like. The work for your album was taking like 3 years or around that. How is mm-hmm. like, maybe you can take us on a process. How do you proceed in your creativity?
Well, this album was definitely different than the previous album, the process, because I was already on the road and life had just like taken off. So I was basically always on a flight, on a train, going somewhere. So I think that what happened with this record was, I believe that an artist just has to capture whatever is coming to them. And so I think that if when I listen to Aizen, I hear where I was. And when I listen to Shabrang, I also hear where I was. And Shabrang is more like an album in flux. It's like I hear that I've been in many different places. And so what I just try to do is accept that during the period of the record, I was in so many different mind states. But in the end, they're always my mind. So I didn't really see that as a problem, you know? Like a lot of people say, like, you have to write or record a record in one headspace. And I disagree, because at the end of the day, it's your head. So you are the red thread. And I think that why I was not afraid of that is because it's not only a personal record when it comes to songwriting. I also actually arrange and compose and produce a lot of the things on the record. So me and Mucky, you know, take any typical record, there's like 20 people involved.
And with you're us, really focusing on yourself.
Yeah, it's not. With us, it's not. We work with a few close friends who are amazing in their instrument, and they're also friends. So they know what we do, and they feel it, and they also make amazing stuff themselves. So it's more like a collaboration. And what I just do is I just curate all of the vibes that I've tracked. And from there on, you start to craft and you start to like sculpt something. And that was the process for this record, which was very different from the previous record. But
sounds
I really enjoy working like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds pretty much like a diary to me.
Yes. Like, absolutely.
As you said in the beginning, it's very personal to you. And mm-hmm. That's also something I wanted to highlight, because, I mean, on the one hand, you're staging a lot, like the when you do music videos, also mm-hmm. your recent appearance during the Fashion Week, it's pretty, or it seems like it's following a concept. On the other hand, mm-hmm. you're sharing a lot of personal emotions, personal mm-hmm. achievements in your career as an artist. And yeah. I mean, for now, for example, you have this concept for of the album, and then on the other hand, you're sharing, yeah, pretty much or a lot of yourself in terms of emotions. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Interesting to see that you're like going both ways.
Yeah.
Getting back to your process, as you said, you're also producing, sitting in the studio. I can see you had have a little or a small setup at home, and I also saw on your Instagram a recent video where you've been editing a song by yourself and making another version. So you can really see that there's not like a big team behind Sefta Lisa. And 20 producers are sitting there and doing a dance track out of an edit. You discovered like music producing as a very late stage. I mean, nowadays a lot of people playing instruments, yeah, then having their first computer with 14 and then starting producing right away. But you were focused. You were a basketball player, right?
Yeah, that was.
You also played for the national teams.
Yeah, that was one of the things I did in my younger life. I also just went to university, so that was my main ambition.
How did you end up doing music then? Or end up as a little bit provocative?
Well, I think that as a human being in life, you get conditioned, you know, for yourself. You identify as a man, and then when you grow up, depending on where you grow up, what your culture is, where your background is, but also what is your socioeconomic status, you get this kind of labeling, right? Like, this is good, this is bad, this is where you need to go. And that's conditioning, which is fine, because I also think that it helps some people to find their way. But in my case, I definitely was conditioned with realities that don't really suit me. So I kind of had to dig and see that reality was not for me. And in my case, that was finishing my studies and realizing that I never felt centered. And I think that variety of activities that I pursued in my younger life, they kind of gave me that insight, that spiritual insight of where do I feel home? Where do I feel good? And I started traveling a bit more, and then I got in touch with different cultures. And one of the cultures that really inspired me was the Brazilian one. And the way that they were using and incorporating music as kind of like the center of life, instead of it having played as a soundtrack in the elevator, was very inspiring for me. And then I realized
it's pretty different to the Western Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also dance, and just like they're very physical, you know, I felt very attracted by that. I always did from my childhood. I always had this kind of attraction to, you know, in Iran, we have that same thing. We have this insane amount of passion for music and also the physical realm. And I think the West is a little bit detached from that, which I also understand, but it's just a different differentiation. So basically, when I was about, I think, 23, I started to have these very strong insights coming from my subconscious that my entire life was always based around music. Like, when I was young, I would remember all the rap lyrics because I was so obsessed by the vocabulary that underground rappers would use. And then I proceeded, and then I got into this like soft rock phase, and I, you know, and music could just take me on a journey that others in my near surroundings, I didn't see them having that same experience. And because I was never like playing an instrument or singing. I was never really doing it myself, but still the highlights of my life, I started to feel that they were all based around music. So the highlights of my life were a period where I would go to a lot of concerts, or the moment that I discovered a new record and I would stick to it for months. And also, I was the type of person who could listen to music for 9 hours a day and not get tired.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. And it would get me in trouble because when I was playing basketball, or when I was studying, or when I was like, even when I had a job, I actually always wanted to listen to music. And yeah. Of course, it's not really appropriate in a lot of situations. And so I think that at some point, these elements, also my own presence, like I have this presence that people always need to make a comment about. That it's been like this since I'm a child. And I think that just my presence and then my own interests and everything that I've experienced in life started to like kind of talk to me like, hey, hey, we're here. Hey, why are you ignoring us? And that's kind of how it started. I never really made a conscious decision. It was just like, I always say this because like some of my friends know that I was saying that before I ever did anything, but I always was saying to my friends, like, I'm an artist. I just don't really know how to make art yet. I knew that I was like, I knew that I was going to do that, but I just didn't have the forms yet. But I always had the ideologies. And even now when I listen to, when I listen to my favorite tracks or songs or albums from when I was like 16, I still like them. I've never had this phases, you know, you ask me like, do you ever regret stuff, or do you feel like you don't really
feel that
anymore? Yeah, it's no, I think that the strong identity was very, very present. I just needed to find it.
Yeah, interesting. And then you started your music career, and you also, starting your own label and have full independency. How did that come? Was it like also an organic development, or was it more
definitely
a decision?
No, it was organic, but it became more of a decision. I think it's the mentality of, I think I just picked that up in being around different cultures and just being around different societies. And it's like, you know, this mentality of like dog eat dog, and
you want to be out of this.
Yeah.
And do you also like to have the full control, or are you more trying to get people involved?
I think that the full control was at some point was definitely driving me, but that is not the case anymore because it's impossible to do such a project by yourself. And I am very lucky and grateful to have a few people around me that are so incredibly invested in this project. But yeah, it was an organic process of, you know, wanting to own your own music, because I think, you know, I think about this a lot. I think music is one of the few forms of art that has been abused so much. And for instance, I think that dance has the same kind of thing. Well, that for instance, when you signed to a label, you kind of give away most of your product, right? Even in the best case scenario deal, a huge share of your music is not yours anymore. But then when you explain that to people, they tell you, but you need to accept that in order to go
have opportunities.
I don't understand. So you're giving away your product for free and for promotion and for opportunities? And then what is the opportunity going to do? It's going to give you a new product that is not yours. So I think it's very, very strange. This whole model of the music industry, the more that I'm like aging, the more I don't understand it.
It's really strange.
It's really strange to me that people can actually try to explain to you why you're giving away your music. And they actually believe that it's a rightful thing to do. I really don't understand that. Can you imagine, like, you've made a body lotion, and it's like it's
your baby. It's
your baby. It's your perfect formula. And then you in order to sell it, you have to give it away. Nobody does that except for when it comes to the music industry or dancers. It's the same with dancers. They're, you know, with that, I don't get it.
I mean, we've already talked about it a lot, but as your records are very personal, and you've said it that you want to be surrounded also by friends, by people you like and you want to be surrounded by, and don't give your products, as I was saying about the body lotion, that it could be your baby. I assume that, like, every track, every single line of your lyrics is one of your babies, and you don't want to give this in the hands of strangers and people who say, we're gonna skip that line, it's not selling.
Absolutely.
I can really see that.
Absolutely.
Getting more deeper in, as we were saying, it's very personal, and you were also talking about the album Sobrang, that you were going up, and there were up and downs and very different situations you were in. When I listen to your tracks, I always get the feeling that it's kind of melancholic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really like it personally, but I can really see that a lot of artists are also getting a very hang to melancholic moods and emotions. Is it also for you a form or a way to get along with your personal problems you're challenging with?
Well, that is interesting, because I was wondering a long time how is it possible that I have this infinite pool of melancholy to draw from? Because, you know, as a present being, I do really enjoy my life. So for a long time, I was thinking, like, I was kind of overlooking the fact that I have had pain in my body and since I'm 19. So I recently realized that the reason why I don't need to experience anything is because I have such a sensible body and such a sensible brain that there's, like, constantly things happening, coming, that I can draw creativity from. And I think it's definitely a way to deal with that. I just have a very, very sensitive vessel.
When you now listen to your own music, when you listen to your album, how does that trigger you then? Are you, like, as you're saying that, or as some situations were causing a certain emotion, are you then getting back to this point of the emotion, or are you then seeing it from another perspective and seeing, like, okay, wow, I was feeling that way back then, but now I can really see that there was a development and I'm over it, or I'm dealing way better.
Yeah, I think that the process of recording and making music for me is like a more a self-explanatory road where you look back and it kind of explains a lot to me about myself, and it helps me to deal with a lot of things. And yeah, when I look at it, I definitely see that I look at it with an eye of compassion and understanding, because I think this year I reflected a lot on who I am, and therefore I really understand why I make what I make. And it's strange, but I also really understand why people resonate with the music. And I can even sense sometimes what it is that makes them resonate with it. Because, and I'm talking about like a more like an energy angle. I'm not talking about like personal experiences. Like you just told me that it's your one of your albums to travel with because it calms you down. And that really, really, that touches me, because I would never have explained that about someone. But I do sense that my music, I sense that there is a group of people that just they just get those small, all of the small details that I've like crafted, it hits them.
Yeah.
And they feel it, and it's kind of like a high sensory massage, you know what I mean, with very small needles. And I think that is what happens to me when I make it. So now that I'm like proceeding, it's not strange for me that people feel that way anymore.
So they're going maybe the same process as you did, and they're like feeling the same feelings you had when you were like kind of creating this.
You know, some people are in phases of their life, and I've been there as well. Maybe you've been there as well, where you feel like you're numb. And then you have phases where you feel everything all the time.
Yeah.
And I think those numb phases, as human beings, if we keep overindulging with everything, we get more numb. Have you ever like not listened to music for 4 days, and then the first time you hear music in your ears?
Yeah,
you should try it.
Yeah,
you should try it. Like I've had like sessions where I was like in meditation or something, and I would withdraw from everything that would give me a sensory or
distraction.
No, not only distraction, but also pleasure. I would withdraw from pleasure.
Ah, okay.
And then it's super interesting because your brain basically releases endorphins when you eat something with sugar, when you listen to music, when you watch a movie. But the levels of those receptors, they go from like, let's say 0 to 10. And like when you take, let's say you take MDMA or something. I've never tried drugs in my entire life, but when you take MDMA, the receptors release endorphins on a level of 10. When you listen to music, it's probably 2 or 3, and it can go back to 1 if you keep pumping those 8s, 9s, and 10s. But if you reduce all of those extreme sensory pleasures, then you start to, your brain starts to
remodel your level, your levels.
Yeah. Yes. And, and that has been super interesting for me, because I think that my music has those very small little sensory pleasures, you know? It's not big bangs and like fast satisfaction. Like, you know, radio music is written in a certain format to give you immediate release and pleasure. And I think because I, as a person, do not look for those instant gratifications. My music is not instant gratifying.
Yeah, so, it's not easy accessible, yeah. I'd say. Like when you're...
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
That was what I'm saying when I first watched your music video. I was pretty touched by the video, but the music, I had to listen to the second time because maybe that's what you described. I mean, you're so used to have an easy satisfaction or an easy access to things and also to the music when you're listening to. And then at some point for interesting stuff and something new, you need the second listen.
Yeah,
because otherwise you couldn't realize because your level is too high to feel again.
Yeah,
I don't know if you you picked or if you checked this, but I really love quotes, and you said a lot of stuff that is really fitting a lot of what you're doing, and. Like one part of a quote is really, really matching here. Like the process is more important than the outcome.
Yeah.
Because like the outcome you're getting a higher satisfaction is not necessarily the most important thing. It's about the process to like maybe gain down a little bit and then start from the scratch. I really like the idea of having 4 days of less pleasure and like, zero down your levels, remodeling. Really interesting idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we are facing the end of our podcast, I just wanted to like the classical question of what's coming next. You've just released the work or your first work as Sevda Anna, together with Anastasia Konovalova, the music video for your song Habibi. Is there more to come? Are you going more into the visual direction, or what's next?
Absolutely.
As you were also relaxing nowadays and maybe calming down a little bit.
I'm really trying to be more. I'm trying to do less so I can think of more, and I feel that this whole year has given. Myself the opportunity to really think outside of the box and not necessarily limit my creativity to a form. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to explore different forms. And I think music and visuals will always be driving forces. But I'm really interested to incorporate different forms and try different combinations. Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this, and let's see what's coming next. Sevda, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
It was a real pleasure.
Yeah.
And hopefully meet you soon again in person.
Thank you.
That was my chat with Sevda Lisa. I was really impressed by her step back and the reflection about her life during the last years. Also to take a break from the media to have a reset and be more sensitive to enjoy it even more in detail afterwards. That's really something that I'll definitely take with me. I hope you enjoyed the conversation too, and we are really happy if you leave a review on Apple or text us your feedback on Instagram. I hope to see you very soon. We'll be in touch.
Das war der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast.
Abonniert den Podcast bei Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify oder Deezer.
Wir sehen uns im Club.
Bis dann.